And turn with me now to Job chapter 32. Job chapter 32 is what we're going to look at, which means we're getting close to the end. Actually, this is the last response of those to Job. On the one hand, we've been looking through Job's discussion with his three friends. And this morning, we're looking at the fourth one who finally does speak and grant wisdom to them. In fact, as I read over the passage in preparation for this morning, this past week, I was constantly kind of taken back by Elihu's approach to it all. He's not there to debate Job. He's not there to argue with Job. As the other ones simply wanted to continue to debate, whose fault is it? Is it God's fault? Is it Job's fault? Why is this happening to Job? Why does he have to go through this suffering? We've looked at some of those many questions throughout the way. But this morning, what I want to do is I want to look at Elihu, who finally responds back to Job, and I believe does it in an appropriate way. And so we've been kind of looking all the way through the book of Job. Well, how do you respond? What do you say? How do you take it on? And I know, for me at least, whenever I hear somebody say to me, well, let me tell you something. How many of you kind of take comfort in those words? How many of you are kind of like, I'm not so sure that, you know. And it's even worse when people come to you and say, well, God's given me a message to tell you. And then you're kind of like, oh, yeah? Oh, really? So anyways, this is kind of Elihu this morning kind of saying to Job, let me kind of give my input into this. And actually, if I can find the verse real quickly, you'll find the fact that it does come. If you look at verse 10 of Job chapter 32, therefore I say, and again, let me get the NIV out as well, and I can join you with that as well. In verse 10, therefore I say, listen to me, I too will tell you what I know. So see there, that's where I got the title from. Let me tell you. Okay, Elihu is saying, let me tell you some things that I know. I've listened to you guys, now here's my side of the story. Here's my opinion. And sometimes whenever we get people sharing opinions, we've just got a bunch of opinions flying around. But Elihu is going to do a great job, I believe, of trying to put some perspective on this. And then actually next week will be Mother's Day, so I'll be taking a break. And then the last 2 weeks, the 20th and the 27th, we'll go back, which the 20th you see in the bulletin. This is the announcement that I probably should have made at the end, so if I forget to... All right, the 20th, you'll see Brett Stong is going to be here. Brett and Morgan are with Campus Outreach to ISU University. Those of the old-timers realize that it's Morgan McCright who went to our church, and now she's married to Brett, and they are serving with Campus Outreach in was Bradley, and then they transferred them to ISU, and so they're serving the Lord at ISU. And they will be here on the 20th, which I recognize is graduation weekend. How many of you have somebody graduating? All right, several, okay, have people graduating, and we want to be made aware of that. Thank you for raising your hands, because now I know some of them that I can put in the bulletin next week to honor them. I tend to forget, and I usually end up slipping by. But anyways, as we look at Elihu this morning, we want to see how he responds to Job and kind of look at that as an example of how do you respond to somebody when you really feel like it's up to you to let them know and to tell them something. There's a sense in which... some of us, I tend to be one who wants to just hold it in. No, I don't want to tell him. I don't want to confront him. I don't want to. How many of you are like the pacifist? You know, you want to just keep peace at all costs so you won't say anything. Others of us can be the ones who are like, you know what, I just got to let him know. And unfortunately, you can pull both triggers at the same time and let them know a little bit more than what they really need to know. And so we have to be careful on both extremes, and that's why I want to look at Elihu. So let's look at it. I do see the fact that, you know the facts. You see that there's seven... what I put down here is to be seven characteristics or seven ways in which Elihu responds to Job that I think is effective for us to learn. So the first one I want to put down here is as we look at Job, let me begin by just reading. I'm going to read probably just the first 10 verses and then we'll jump into this. So these three men, excuse me, let me jump over so I have an NIV the same as you will. So these three men stopped answering Job. Because he was righteous in his own eyes. But Elihu, son of Barachel, the Buzite, of the family of Ram, became very angry with Job for justifying himself rather than God. He was also angry with the three friends because they had found no way to refute Job, and yet had condemned him. Now Elihu had waited before speaking to Job because they were older than he. When he saw that the three men had nothing more to say, his anger was aroused. So Elihu, son of Barachel, the Buzite, said, "I am young in years, and you are old. That is why I was fearful and not daring to tell you what I know. I thought age should speak, advanced years should teach wisdom. But it is the spirit in a man, the breath of the Almighty, that gives him understanding. It's not only the old who are wise, not only the aged who understand what is right. Therefore, listen to me. I too will tell you what I know, for I waited while you spoke. I listened to your reasoning while you were searching for words. I gave you my full attention, but not one of you has proved Job wrong. None of you has answered his arguments. Do not say we have found wisdom. Let God refute him, not man. But Job has not marshaled his words against me, and I will not answer him with your arguments." Now, I'll end the reading there, but we're going to look at actually the next first five chapters. So, let's begin, number one. Elihu responds to Job, I put down with the word, with equality. In other words, when you look at chapters 1, verses 1 through 4, you'll see the fact that, first of all, he talks about Job. Job, you know, where are you coming from? And then he as well addresses the three. I guess I would, the best way for me to put it is that Elihu was equally angered at both of them. And so we see here that as Elihu begins to respond, he responds with equality both to Job. When he talks about Job, he burned with anger at Job because he justified himself rather than God. And so he's mad at Job because Job seems to want to justify himself. And he's also mad at the three friends because they were unable to give him any answer, even though they continue to declare he's wrong. I can't answer you, Job, but I know you're wrong. And so we see here that as Elihu begins to respond, he responds to each of them equally in their response. And we'll see that as we continue through the rest of it. And the reason I do that is because many times whenever we step into an argument that two people are involved in, you're going to get hurt one way or the other. And as well, unfortunately, many times when we get involved between two people who are in a debate or discussion, the tendency is for them to make you want to take a side. Come on, you agree with me, don't you? I'm right. And I thought of this. This is a passage of scripture that I have used many times in my thinking, at least, if not in my actual teachings. But I came across it again in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 17. And Proverbs 18, 17 says, "The first to present his case seems right." Right? Come on, you agree with me, don't you? You understand it from my perspective. This has got to be the right way because this is the way I see it. So listen to me because I'm telling you what's right. Then he goes on to say, till another comes forward and questions him. They always seem right until you get the other side of the story. And then you begin to realize that each of them have their own perspective on the way things are to be seen and the way things are understood. And it's the one who in the middle has to be able to be equal in the way you're presenting your case. And so Elihu responds to Job, first of all, with equality. And I know that I need to move quickly through here. But secondly, he put down here with fervency. Notice what it says three times in the first five verses. Job got what? Angry. Job responded out of anger. Elihu responded out of anger. First of all, he's angry at Job because Job claims that he's innocent and that he justifies himself rather than God. All the way through, Job continues to say, it's not my fault. I didn't do anything. I'm innocent. He tends to justify himself rather than God. And I have been in enough situations, and I believe you have as well, and I've asked this question oftentimes, how can you justify yourself without becoming defensive? I don't know. How can you present your case without seeming to be defensive in what you're saying? Could be an attitude. Could be a way in which you worded things. But oftentimes, whenever somebody makes an accusation, there's always an accusation made and there's always a defense given. And it's difficult to defend yourself without sounding as if you're defensive. So Job is given the accusation here of being justifying himself rather than God. And Elihu responds out of anger. He sees that that's unrighteous, but then he as well responds out of anger to the friends, because they're accusing him without even knowing what he did. So we see that, first of all, he comes out of anger. Secondly, look at verse 18. We see he speaks out of what I put down here to be out of force. Maybe a better word would be compulsion. He's compelled to speak. I too will have my say, verse 17. I too will tell you what I know, for I am full of words. In other words, the words are welling up inside of me. I too am full of words, and the spirit within me now compels me to speak forth. He says, I have to say something. I have to get it out. I have to let people know what has been said. Now again, I've already made reference to this, and you guys can both kind of understand where it's coming from, because on the one hand, there are those of us who will just say, no, I'm just going to stuff it down. I'm not going to say anything. I'll just let it go. And you know what happens when you let it go, what happens? Right? Does it go away? No. But on the other hand, we know of those of which will all of a sudden just let it be said, all right? My wife reminds me often, and I've used this before in an illustration, but if you have ever watched the old Illustrated Bambi, I mean, you know, no, I'm talking the old one, right? Have they done a new one yet? But I'm talking Bambi, and when the midst of Bambi, when, you know, the music, bum, bum, you know, gets a little tense because there's a smoke coming up out of fire, and the idea, and I think it's pretty well worded, like man had entered the forest. But, you know, what are you going to do? And all of a sudden, the footprints of man walking through the forest, and all the birds begin scattering, and the rabbits begin running to their holes, and the chipmunks run up the tree and everything. And there sits in the corner of the grass three or four pheasants, and they're all like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I've got to run. No, don't run. Don't run. No, run. Don't run. No, I got to run. No, don't run. And all of a sudden, she takes off and feathers fly. And we use that illustration because there are people who, in the ideas of their own thinking, I've got to do something. And I'll be honest with you, this comes from my wife, not from me. The first question she would say is, have you prayed about it first? Because go to God before you go to them. And so we see here, however, Elihu's compulsion. Spirit within me is compelling me to do something. I have to say something. That's the wrestling match. When does that compulsion become so intense that you know it's of the Spirit of God who's moving you to do it? Or when is it just, because the second one we'll see here is out of relief, verse 20. Inside I'm like a bottled up wine, like new wineskins that are ready to burst. I must speak and find relief. I must open my lips and reply. I have to say something. Because it's building up within to such an intensity that if I don't, it's just going to burst. As new wine. You know what happens when you put wine into, Jesus talks about, new wine into new wineskins, not new wine into old wineskins. Because if you put new wine into old wineskins, what happens? What's the process called? The fermentation, all right, of the wine ends up producing gas. And what's going to happen if you put it in old wineskins? It's going to rupture. And that's the description that Elihu's using here. This new wine into my wineskins is cut the thing kind of, I'm ready to just explode. And so we see that Job, when he comes, or excuse me, Elihu, when he comes to speak, is coming with great intensity. I just have to say it. I have to get it out. And he's coming with great fervency to speak. And I'm just saying, be careful when you have that. Right? It's better to let it out slowly than to make sure that you just blast it, okay? What comes out sometimes when we are under, find ourselves under fervency and under compulsion, isn't always necessarily of the best. But this is where Elihu's finding himself. I just have to say something. Now, notice he balances that with number three. Elihu responded with equality, with fervency, but, and again, to keep my alliteration going, I use the word patiently. All right, with patiently, you can just use patiently, or you can say with patience if you don't want to elaborate. All right, but he has responded as well with patience. Look at verse 4. Now Elihu had waited before speaking to Job because they were older than he. I'll get to that in just a moment. Verse 11. I waited while you spoke. Listen to your reasoning while you were searching for words. I gave you my full attention. In other words, Elihu didn't just come off of this and just let it go. He didn't just let it fly. I'm going to get this off my chest. I'm going to let it be said. Elihu waited patiently before he spoke. And so then secondly, I put down, as he waited patiently, he respected them. Verse 4, Elihu waited before speaking because they were older than he. I am a young in years, verse 6, and you are old, and this is why I was fearful. Not daring to tell you what I know. I thought age should speak. Those who are advanced in years should teach wisdom. But the spirit of the man and the breath of the Almighty that gives him understanding. It's not only the old who are wise, not only the aged who understand what is right. And so he respected them. He listened to them. All right, verse 11. I'll come back to those other passages in just a moment in my next point. But he listened to them, verse 11, as he was waited patiently. He listened to them. I waited while you spoke. I listened to your reasoning while you were searching out words. And I gave you my full attention. He paid attention to what they were saying. So the reason why I really enjoy Elihu and his response is, when I was younger, you can just go ahead and say, you're not younger anymore, Don. All right. Okay. But when I was younger and entered into the ministry, you got to recognize that when I was, 24 probably, and began entering into the ministry, or somewhere in that age, I'd have to go back and do the math, and I can't quite do it. I think it was maybe 28 or whatever when I first started going to the church. And at the time, at that time, I had to grow facial hair just so people knew that I wasn't in high school anymore. Right? In fact, when I was serving at church up in Minnesota, they asked me to do the local baccalaureate address, which, by the way, our baccalaureate address is coming up the 17th. I didn't get that in the bulletin. I will put that in the bulletin. But the Brimfield baccalaureate will be the 17th. Our church, again, is helping to sponsor that. As we, again, seek to do things within the community. But I had to go speak. And so I'm 28 years old or whatever, something like that. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to go to the high school, kind of walk through the high school, just to kind of get a feel for it. And as I was walking through the high school, I would have teachers come up and say, you better get back to your class. And I'd say, I'm sorry, I don't have a class. You know, and then they're kind of like, well, who do you think you are? I kind of had that stuff. And I might have even been, I can't remember if I was escorted out or not. But anyways, okay. And so the point is the fact that as I was there, I had to learn what it was. And they looked at me with youth. Okay, now that I'm a little bit older, I grow the facial hair just to add more grayness, I guess. But anyways, there's a sense in which, now that I'm older, there's a sense in which you should feel more respected. And I've come to recognize that there tends to be two sides on this. Why? Right? On the one hand, and actually I'm probably on to my next point, but that's all right, I'll give it to you in a minute. On the one hand, those of us who are young in America look on the elderly as what? They're outdated. They're old. They don't know the way things are modern today. They don't know where things are at. They don't understand where I'm going through. Let me ask you, they can't even figure out their cell phone or Twitter or anything else like that, right? And if those of you happen to get a request, you realize I finally, finally, this past week, opened up a Facebook account. Does that make me with it today or what, you know? Okay, so no, that just says how far behind I am in the times, right? Okay, so some of you should have got my Facebook request this past week, but anyways, I got tired of getting my wife's phone to look at hers all the time to see what's happening. And she would tell me, oh, you know this happened? I'm like, where'd you get that, Facebook? Oh, do you know this happened? Oh, really? Facebook. So anyways, all right? But there's a sense in which younger people look at them and they say they're old, they're outdated, they don't know, they don't experience. In fact, how many of you ever realized that your parents went to high school just like you did? Did you ever come to realize your parents went to high school? No, they just were parents all the time. All right? How many of you realize your parents went out on a first date too? When the younger people are going through the things they're going through. But then what happens was the older people who are like me and are kind of like, well, come on, give me some respect. I'm older. You guys are young. You don't even know. You're still wet behind the ears or green behind the ears. You don't know what you're doing. You haven't had time to experience life yet. You guys just think you know, but you don't really know what it's all about. And so the old people, what, tend to look down upon the young people because, as, again, my favorite verse growing up or early in the ministry was, don't let them look down upon you, Timothy. Don't let them look down upon you because you're youth. Now that I'm older, I'm kind of like, nuts, I lost that one. But that's what Job is saying. I waited because you're older. You're wiser. You should be able to give the answers. And I don't see you giving the answers. You don't have any answers. And so now Elihu is saying, I'm younger, but let me tell you the fact that even young people can get it right once in a while. Those young people can say amen. And so we see that Elihu responded back here. Let me go on to my next point because I think I've already given my point, the subpoints of it. Okay. He responded with humility. He says, I am young. I was fearful. I didn't want to respond. I didn't know. I didn't want to tell you what I thought was right because I was young and I wanted to learn from you guys. But when I saw that you couldn't come up with an answer, therefore I thought, maybe I need to say now what the Lord has said to me. And so verse 9, it's not only the old who are wise, not only the aged who understand what's right. So those of you who are younger in high school, you can maybe write that one, underline that one in your Bible, write it above, put it above your parents' bed so that they can realize that it's not only the old who are wise. But Job comes up and says, I'm young. I didn't want to say anything. I was fearful. But the last point I put down here, I was understanding. I can understand things as well. I was able to get it right. I was able to come to some understanding. And so let me now tell you what I know, the way I see it, the way I understand it. And so Job in his humility is simply looking for understanding. Now I've already, like I said, I already gave you most of what I wanted to go through there. Number 5, with sincerity. Job comes as well with sincerity in that which he speaks. That he would come and speak sincerely of the words that he's bringing forth. Look at chapter 33, verse 3. My words have come from an upright heart. My lips sincerely speak what I know. The Spirit of God has made me. The breath of the Almighty gives me life. Answer me then if you can. Prepare yourselves and confront me. Am I just like God before you? So in other words, I can come as well and present it. So he comes with, a sincerity of heart. Job is coming with a sincerity of an upright heart, simply seeking to try to find out, how do we resolve this? He's not coming blaming Job or blaming the other three. He's simply saying, you guys aren't giving me any answers here. And in his own sincerity of heart, he presents his position. I put down he had a sincerity of intentions. He goes on to Job and says to Job, I'm not coming here to try to beat you down. I'm not coming here to try to overthrow you, to try to point the finger at just you. You don't have anything to fear from me. But rather, I'm simply coming to present this unto you. And so his intentions were sincere in which he was going to them. He wasn't going to place blame or to try to make accusation. He was simply going to them to try to help them to come to some type of understanding. Some better understanding of it. And then the last one I put down here, the sincerity of his discussion. He was just coming to open this up. Let me ask you this. So Job Elihu responded to the three men with sincerity and sincerity of heart as he did it. And then number six, let me go on because I quickly need to end here. Elihu responded with integrity. Elihu responded with integrity. And I put down here several subpoints. So let me run through my subpoints. How do we know how do we understand Elihu's integrity when we come to somebody else? And I thought, wow, he did a great job here. Verse 8, I'm going to pick it up there. That's the break. But you have said in my hearing, I heard the very words, I am pure and without sin. I am clean and free from guilt. That was the argument that Job was giving. I'm clean and free from guilt. Verse 10, yet God has found fault with me. Elihu is saying, listen, God's even found fault with me. I've got my problems. And I like what he says after that. Look at what it says. He considers me his enemies. All right. He fastens my feet in shackles and he keeps close watch on all my paths. But I tell you, in this you're not right, for God is greater than man. And so we do see the fact that as Elihu comes here, he comes also as one who is seeking to know what God has already said. I know that this is what God has said about me. And so he comes understanding that. Secondly, he puts down, with integrity, he talks about what God speaks, what God says. For does God speak now one way, now another, through man, though man may not perceive it in a dream? And actually, other translations have it, or the NIV says, does God speak one way and then another? Actually, the other translations translate, the NASB, ESB translates it, does God speak once or twice, and we still don't get it? In other words, it's kind of like, how many times does God have to tell you before you're going to get it? And how many different ways does God have to speak before you're going to listen? That basically is the argument Elihu is giving here. For when God says it, does he have to say it, tell you once or twice? How many times does God have to say it, and yet you don't get it? Verse 15, in a dream, in a vision, he speaks about that. He may speak to your ears in terrifying with warnings. He may also, and he goes on to talk about in hardship or in difficulties. Does it take difficulty for God to get your attention? What does it take for God to speak for you to listen to him? And then as well, verse 26, God restores. He prays to God and finds favor with him. He sees God's face and shouts for joy. He is restored by God to his righteous state. The one who comes to God in prayer, seeking God, asking God, desiring God, finds God restoration. Job, don't you want to be restored by God? Then come. Because he restores and he redeems, verse 28. He redeemed my soul from going down to the pit. And then verse 34 I put down here in verses 5 and 10, God is righteous. Job says, I'm innocent, but God denies me justice. And Elihu comes back and says, no, wait a minute, God's a righteous God. He doesn't deny justice. And then I want to, because of time, I'm going to quickly jump down to verse chapter 34, verse 31. Suppose a man says to God, I am guilty, but will offend no more. Okay, I admit, God, I'm guilty, I've done it, but I won't do it anymore. Now, do we have to show our hands? How many of you said that to God? God, I'm sorry, I did it, I won't do it anymore. Notice what he says, though. Teach me what I can see. All right, this is what the person says. I'm guilty. I've offended you. I won't do it anymore. Teach me what I cannot see. Help me, God. And if I've done wrong, I will not do it again. Now look at verse 33. This is somebody who's coming to God saying, God, I'm sorry. I won't do it anymore. Should God then reward you on your terms? Do you see what he's saying? Just because you come to God and say, okay, God, I'm sorry. I know I did it. I won't do it anymore. God, will you forgive me? God, will you please? God, will you do this? God, will you? God, will you? God, will you? And there's a sense in which do we not many times when we come unto God with our own brokenness over what we have done, then give God the terms by which he can forgive us. God, if you could forgive me, I won't do this anymore. God, if you do this, okay? God, now do this for me. You must decide, not I, so tell me what you know. You must decide. Should God reward you on your own terms? When you refuse to repent? And so we see God's design here for his repentance as Elihu comes back unto Job and reminds him of what he's done. Now again, he goes on with integrity to speak about God's might in chapter 35, verse 6. God be exalted, chapter 5. Right, if you read through all of chapter 36, you're going to see his explanation of God. Is not God the one who holds the clouds? Is not God the one who forms the rain? Is not God the one who, and he goes through all of who God is in chapter 36. And then my final point, because my time is done. Elihu responds to Job with honesty. At this, my heart pounds, verse 37, and leaps from a place. Listen to the roar of his voice, the rumbling that comes from his mouth. And again, he goes on talking about the thunder and the lightning and the power of God and all that God has done. He causes the snow to fall on the earth, verse 9, and the rain shower be a mighty downpour, so that all men he has made may know his work. He stops every man from his labor, and the animals take cover and they remain. And so he goes through all of this. Verse 14, listen to this, Job. Stop and consider God's wonders. Do you know how God controls the clouds and makes the lightning flash? Do you know how the clouds hang poised? Those wonders of him who is perfect in knowledge? And so I put down here, Job comes honest with God. It's honest, God. You must understand where God's at and who God is. And come to an honest understanding of the God who sits enthroned above the heavens. The God to whom we must give an account. And then he ends up speaking here with Job. He comes honest with Job. And lastly, put down, he's honest with himself. Therefore, man, revere him, for he does not have regard for all the wise in heart. Does he not have regard for all the wise in heart? And so he comes back to his understanding even of who he is. And so we see here Elihu responds to Job, not in a way of making accusation or charges, but simply in a way of saying, listen, can't we come to an understanding here? Can't we understand who God is? Now next week, again, we're going to pick it up chapter 30, or not next week, again, in 2 weeks we'll pick up 38 and the rest of as we do the last four chapters, and we end the book of Job. And thank you for your patience with me as we've walked through it. But at the same time, we've had an opportunity of seeing how do we deal with the difficult situations, the difficult circumstances that come our way, and the times in which we cannot understand our God. And Elihu here helps us understand how do we respond when we find those times and come across those places.